Text or WhatsApp your view to Greg on 086 60 25,000.
And you have in your numbers. Thank you very much indeed. All very much appreciated. Can you ask Micheál Colum where communism has ever been successful for the people of that country? Another, I think that Catherine Connolly will be a game changer. People will back Labour and not go for Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil or Sinn Féin. Catherine Connolly, well, I mean, we don't know what Sinn Féin's going to do. Obviously, Jarlath Burns, his name emerged yesterday. It's interesting language that Mary Lou McDonald used in saying that the decision tomorrow will be a game changer because it could be a bit of a damp squib, and I'm sure they don't want that. Are they going to run Piers Doherty? It seems less likely. Are they going to back Catherine Connolly? Is that how you could frame a game changer, as you know, people have been anticipating that for some time? Or is there somebody else? I don't know. Simply don't know. It's all a bit of crack. I suppose it's all a bit of crack speculating. Speaking of the presidential election, by the way, as you would know, Gareth Sheridan, he's been in the race for quite some time and he's got the backing of two councils. Now, Mr. Sheridan needs the backing of four councils to get onto the ballot paper. And he has a couple of meetings coming up. And my understanding is that Donegal County Council, that certain representatives within that council have been meeting to converse ahead of a meeting on Tuesday. And it is likely, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we'll return to this on Tuesday, it's likely that Gareth Sheridan between now and then will get the backing of a third council, which means that Donegal County Council could be responsible for getting him onto the ballot paper. We understand that there have been meetings for those that have a vote, and that a meeting will take place on Tuesday to give support to Gareth Sheridan. As I say, he needs the backing of a fourth council to stand in the presidential election. So we'll be thrust into the media spotlight again because it could be our council that actually are the deciding factor there. Ask Micheál if he agrees with the consensus of excluding independent candidates from getting on the presidential election. I didn't get to that. My apologies. Another, the government and the Dáil are going to push hate speech and the end of free speech. Why don't they put it to the people? But that won't happen because the last referendum didn't go well. And if they put hate speech and the end of free speech to the people, it could go badly again. The thing that I find interesting about this, and I don't want to labour the point, I've talked about it quite a bit, it's just sometimes I feel I can see what's coming down the line. The presumption is at this point that it would be sort of conservative or, not conservative, but sort of more left-leaning parties that would push for free speech. But the truth is you've got a very conservative government in the United States at the moment, and it's actually they are pushing for the restriction of language. Hundreds and hundreds of people have lost their jobs because they celebrated, which is sickening, the death of Charlie Kirk. But also too, Donald Trump has control over the FCC, which effectively is the Commissioner Man of Ireland. And now what you're seeing is TV shows that are critical of Donald Trump, they're being taken off air, which is not free speech. So, you know, there's a bit of cloak and dagger going on here. The presumption is it would be sort of left-leaning governments that would be pushing for free speech. But in fact, in America, it's a right government that is making some of the biggest inroads in restricting free speech. In other words, the price of the Second Amendment seems to be the First Amendment. The left aren't wealthy. How many of Sinn Féin TDs are worth a million? There's a few around here, says a listener. Charlie Kirk, he was a great debater when he was against children. Watch him debate adults and you see he falls apart quick as the propagandist he is. I think at the same time, though, he's still debating, and you don't always win your debates. But I think the argument being is that he would debate anyone. Stop spreading misinformation on the shooter. He was a Mormon from a MAGA family. His friends say that while he wasn't anti-gay, he was a liberal. His Discord logs show this as well. Like, seriously, stop spouting lies from a perjured FBI director who said Epstein didn't traffic anyone. He was registered as a non-Republican, non-Democratic voter. It is accepted, and not just the FBI, that he had was becoming more radicalised. He was living with a person who was born a male, transitioning to female. And if you look at what he wrote on the bullets, they are certainly not MAGA terminology. I'm not going by what anyone says to me. I've just looked at it from multiple sources, etc. And he wasn't a member of MAGA. What your dad and your granny's into is not necessarily what you're into. The Charlie Kirk debate. Greg, I think a lot of people are missing the point on death. He wasn't killed because of opinions. He was killed because the nature of modern-day America is to literally shoot first and ask questions later. He was an utterly heinous person who championed violence and oppression on anyone who didn't fit into his niche view of the world. But did he deserve to die? No. Was any humanly conscientious person horrified by the manner of his death? Yes. The problem is America in 2025 and the rhetoric being spoon-fed to the masses by that buffoon in the White House. Well, that's your view, of course. And the question was literally as you've just outlined. That is the way people are dealing with politics now. Are we going to see it happen like that here? Shoot first, ask questions later. What Micheál Colum is saying is divide and conquer. He means to conquer the less well-off. Many people don't understand what is happening, but that's what Micheál meant. Yes, but the point being is there are people of all different backgrounds who are less well-off, right? So you can be working class, you can be poor, you can be in poverty, but you might have different political views to another person, or you're on about dividing within that subset of people. I don't see what's achieved by that. Greg, seriously, stop both-siding these violent thugs. Statistically, the violence is almost entirely on the right, and you lot in the media pretending this is a both-sides issue is exactly the problem. You lot let violence rhetoric from the right sit there and go unchallenged for the last two decades. I haven't been doing this for two decades. And secondly, I don't see any violence out there. I see rhetoric at this point. And what I do observe, and I make no bones about it, is very strong language from both sides. Now, whether that it's the right or the left, that turns into some sort of violence or what have you, I don't know. But I can only go by the discourse that I see out there. Is Micheál Colum serious? Such a mouthful. The vast majority of people are not far right. The concern for what the country is becoming. Every house you go into around the county, people talk about the state of Letterkenny and how it's in decline and being flooded with immigrants, but are afraid to open their mouths in public because you'll be called a racist. Problems are developing already. Schools are full to the max. Increasing delays with doctors and hospitals. Students can't get accommodation because it's all being taken up. Just before I take the break, it's interesting that last week someone was talking about bullying in school, and I was speaking from my narrow perspective of what I've experienced, and I said that I thought that nowadays we are better at managing bullying in the school environment. And I was speaking more secondary school, and as I say, I was speaking just really of my own personal experience. But it's astonishing, really, of all the comments that we might have and read out and things that I might say that are our slips or conversation starters or continuers. I got pulled up on that one by a number of parents, and it particularly was parents of children in primary school and children maybe with autism or some other learning difficulties. So they might be in a special class in a mainstream school. And as I say, a couple of, not angrily, but very passionately, parents pulled me up and says, no, actually what's happening is that, you know, I had to move my child from this school or that school, or my child's suffering in this school or that school because they are in a special class, and that maybe mainstream classes, the students within them aren't being educated enough to understand that there are differences in this, that and that. So firstly, apologies if I tried to make out there wasn't a problem where one might exist. But also, if there is a particular issue, and it's only education, right? Kids are like sponges. We can teach them the right thing. But there seem to be I engage three people, so I always work that out as a percentage. Three parents of children with special needs in mainstream schools or not. And they said bullying was very much a problem in that environment. Not exclusively kids with additional needs, but that's what was raised to me. So firstly, if that's a thing, I apologise that I wasn't aware of that. But secondly, maybe it's something we need to talk about, increase education, and maybe try and eliminating as best we can it happening. Anything you want to say on that? 086 60 25,000. 086 60 25,000. And just to recap that news, we understand that Donegal County Council is to meet on Tuesday, and they will have the power to get Gareth Sheridan, with two councils on board at the moment, a third to follow, over the line and onto the ballot. ballot paper. We understand that meetings have been ongoing to sort of work out the numbers and make that happen. Now, recent developments in Letterkenny University Hospital should pave the way to easier access to diabetes technology, which can help local people with type 1 diabetes manage their condition more effectively. Dr. Thomas Griffin, consultant physician and diabetologist at University Hospital Galway, joins me now. Good morning to you.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a great pleasure to be on with you today.
Right. Type 1 diabetes. Could you just outline for us what that is, how it affects people?
Sure. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune condition where the pancreas stops making insulin. So an autoimmune condition is a condition where where your body attacks its own pancreas. So if you don't have insulin, you need to find a way to get insulin. So instead of having your own insulin, you have to give some injections to replace the insulin that your body would normally make. And managing this is a constant amount of work. So you have to inject one long-acting injection every day to give you a background insulin, and then a short-acting injection with your meals. And that would typically be 3 to 4 times a day. And you need to try and match this insulin with the amount of food that you're taking. Also, as part of that, you need to monitor what your glucose levels are. And traditionally, this was with finger pricking. So you get a lancet, and you do a small prick on the side of your finger, and the blood would go from the lancet into your blood glucose meter, and you'd get a reading. And based on the reading, then you could make adjustments to the amount of insulin that you're going to take. Type 1 diabetes is actually relentless. People often describe it as a full-time job with no holiday. You can't take a break for a single day because your body has no insulin, so you need to keep replacing it. And there's constant worries that your blood glucose level will go a bit too high or a bit too low. So it's always something that's playing in your mind, and it's always in the background.
So in terms of its management, how much wiggle room is there? Like, can someone become quite sick quite quickly?
So if a person doesn't get to take their insulin for a day, for example, and they live with type 1 diabetes, they can become very sick very quickly. Right. So again, it's really important that a person living with type 1 diabetes takes their insulin. But it is a relentless burden. It's it's a huge cognitive load that a person living with type 1 diabetes has to take. And with that in mind, I guess the stage is set for new technologies which can help a person living with diabetes live better. So it's invisible from the outside, 24/7 condition, and that never lets up.
All right. Now, we're speaking ahead of a meeting in the Mount Errigal Hotel on Thursday. It's at 6:15 p.m. and it's directed or aimed at people living with diabetes and their families. So what has changed that makes, access to technology to manage this condition, what has changed? What have been the developments?
So there's been some game-changing developments in the management of type 1 diabetes over the last number of years. And we're very lucky in Ireland that we can bring some of these changes to people living with type 1 diabetes in the country. So I think, Greg, the first thing, so if you have a blood glucose meter, it's like me asking you to drive from your studio there to Dublin and telling you that you need to go to Monaghan and that you need to go to Athlone on the way and giving you no further directions. So you have 4 points in the day. And now we've got this thing, it's like a sat nav. So instead now, if you're having 4 points, you'll have a full map. And this is called a continuous glucose monitor. So it gives you a map of your glucose levels over the day. So it's a small sensor where the tip of it just goes under the surface of the skin, and it checks your blood glucose levels every couple of minutes and sends the results to your phone or a little personal device that you'll have. It can also set some alarms. So if your blood glucose level is going too high or your blood glucose level is going too low, it can send you a little alert so you'll know that that's happening. What it means for the person living with diabetes is instead of finger pricking, they're having to finger prick maybe 8, 10, 12, 15 times a day. People can now just use the sensor, which lasts for between kind of 7 to 14 days, depending on the specific sensory that you have. But by far, possibly the more even exciting development again, which has probably come to Ireland over the last 4 years, is called hybrid closed-loop insulin pump therapy. Your listeners might be familiar with the term artificial pancreas, and that's what hybrid closed loop is referred to. So this links your continuous glucose monitor, which we talked about already, which reads your glucose levels, to an insulin pump. An insulin pump is a small device. It's like the old bleeps or pagers you'd see on the ads on TV. So it's about that size, and it gives you a continuous infusion of short-acting insulin under the surface of your skin. But the beauty about these new pumps actually is they have an algorithm. So again, if your blood glucose levels on your continuous glucose monitor are high, the hybrid closed loop can give you a little bit more insulin. And if they're low or predicted to go low, the hybrid closed loop pump can actually stop or suspend the insulin. So it really helps to maintain people on a steady glucose level.
But it also allows people to get on with their lives.
Oh, and absolutely.
You know, rather than constantly feeling they have to actively monitor this situation, I presume after a while and after you build trust with the technology, you can just progress with your life as best as is possible.
But what we like to say is it takes away a lot of the thinking and worrying so people can get on with the living. So it really, really helps take away that cognitive load. And we've done some work. I used to work in Leicester in the UK. And when I was in Leicester, we did some work where we interviewed some people who use hybrid closed loop. And the kind of feedback that we get from the people and also the partners of the people who are using the hybrid closed loop. And the feedback was amazing. So some of the things people would say is the first time I've got a full night's sleep. I really feel more on top of my condition. I'm far less worried about the health problems that I'll have in the future. And partners would tell you that they were less worried about their child, for example, because they feel that the parent, I should say in this case, less worried about their child because they were less worried that person would get a low blood glucose level overnight. And again, there's these things called following functions in the phone. So a parent can follow their child's glucose or insulin level remotely. So if they're in school, for example, they can keep an eye on things if they want it. And that type of thing is very, very reassuring for parents of people who live with type 1 diabetes.
What's the story with access to that? So say someone now is listening to type 1 diabetes, can they get it through the HSE, so to speak? Is this is this private, or what's the story?
So I'll answer a couple of parts of that. So continuous glucose monitoring is the first part. The government have committed to fund continuous glucose monitoring for all people living with type 1 diabetes in Ireland, which is a really, really great achievement. And I think we need to be cognizant that across the world, this isn't the case that all people living with type 1 diabetes can get a CGM. So we're very, very fortunate in Ireland. In terms of hybrid closed loop, there's good access to that as well. It's funded through the HSE. Lots of centres are working really, really hard to give people access to hybrid closed loop therapy across Ireland. Again, it's a new technology, so it takes a little bit of time to get everyone access, because there's 30 to 35,000 people living with type 1 diabetes in the country, and the number of people getting access to hybrid closed loop pump or getting onboarded on hybrid closed loop is increasing every week.
Okay, so there's no real sell here as such. Like, the idea is that if you have type 1 diabetes or someone in the family does, this technology is or will be available to you at some point, and that's why it's a good idea to get along to this meeting on Thursday. Is that where we're at then?
That's certainly true. There is a small number of people where this technology isn't suitable, but some people don't like, you have to wear the pump all of the time. So some people don't like having a device attached to them. Some people are getting on exceptionally well with their daily injections and really, really like that and really, really happy. What this does is it provides people with another option, another tool in our armory to help people living with type 1 diabetes to live better. So that's the goal, is to give people choices and help the person. And again, if you come along to this event on Tuesday, it's about helping the person to pick the technology and so on.
So just to clarify, sorry, right. I've got Thursday, the 25th of September. You said Tuesday.
Apologies. Yes. Sorry. I'm really sorry.
Thomas, normally I'm the wrong one. Normally I'm the wrong one. That's okay. Okay.
Sorry. It's definitely me. It's
Thursday. But do you know what? Isn't it welcome to be talking about an area of health, especially in such a serious condition where we are making progress, that there are, and as you say, look, it's not going to be for absolutely everyone, but I'm sure there's people who feel that, as you say, their sleep's improved, their life is generally improved, they feel they can get on with life rather than sort of being constantly anchored by this condition.
I think the thing you see is that a person's glucose levels improve dramatically once they go onto this technology. And I think the thing about that is we know that having higher glucose levels over a long period can be associated with kind of developing complications of diabetes. Mm-hmm. This technology allows a person to get their glucose levels down, which over the long period will help that person reduce the risk of developing any complications of diabetes. So again, it takes away a lot of the thinking and worrying. So people can get on with living their lives.
Just one question, if you don't mind. My daughter has a real hatred for the pump, specifically the tubing. She refuses to use it. Will the Omnipod ever be available here in the Republic?
So that's a really, really good question, actually. We're very, very hopeful that a patch pump, so I should maybe explain the difference for your listeners about what the question is. So the pumps that are available in Ireland at the moment, as I said before, kind of like the old bleeps or pagers. There's a little bit of tubing that goes from the bleep or pager and a little needle that goes under the surface of the skin, and the insulin goes through that. So you have a little bit of tubing. What your listener is referring to is a patch pump that sits directly on your arm, a bit like this, and there's no tubing there. At present, we don't have patch pumps in Ireland, But we're very hopeful that they will become available in the short to medium term. And I think they would be very, very helpful as well.
Oh, that's what they are. I've seen people in different environments with them on the patch pump. And sorry, I should have asked this earlier on. I've been focusing on type 1 diabetes. Is this type of technology useful for the treatment of other types of diabetes? A caller's got type 3 and is wondering, you know, what's the situation there?
That's a good question. What we know at the moment is that CGM can be useful for people living with type 2 diabetes. That's not funded in Ireland at the moment, and not funded in a lot of countries around the world for people living with type 2 diabetes. Your caller has type 3, which typically is a pancreatic type of diabetes rather than type 2. And again, there is evolving evidence of the usefulness of CGM, certainly, and also potentially of the usefulness of hybrid closed loop insulin pumps in people with type 3 diabetes.
Yeah. Okay. It's interesting because we're talking about advances in technology, and that advancing continues. Okay. So that meeting,
Advancement, Greg, it's actually going at a spectacular rate. These are hybrid closed loops. So again, hybrid. So when we call it hybrid, people still have to tell the pump that they're having meals. There's evolving evidence now of kind of a fully closed loop pump, so people won't have to alert the pump that they have meals. So again, the technology has improved more in the last 10 years than probably in the previous 90 years in terms of managing type 1 diabetes. It's really an extraordinary time.
The further incorporation of artificial intelligence and stuff, it really is quite exciting times. If you want to learn more about this technology, there is a free technology information meeting. It's at the Mount Errigal Hotel in Letterkenny on Thursday, the 25th of September. It runs from 6:15 p.m. and it's really for people living with diabetes and their families. Broadly speaking, or specifically type 1 for this particular meeting, Thomas?
So again, anyone living with diabetes who'd like to see about the technology is certainly more than welcome to attend. But it is designed for people who live with type 1 diabetes or the partners or carers of people who live with type 1 diabetes.
Thanks for your time today. Have a great weekend. Look after yourself.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. That's Thomas, Dr. Thomas Griffin, a consultant physician, diabetologist at University Hospital Galway. It's astonishing. We couldn't have had that conversation 10 years ago because that technology and that means of treatment simply didn't exist. We are joined on the programme now by Shannon McGee, who's manager of Pub Alaskara and member of the Tin Chan campaign. Good morning to you, Shannon. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
It's good to have you with us. Right, okay. Now, a national protest for the Irish language and the Gaeltacht. There'll probably be a national protest about my pronunciations in that introduction. I hope not. But talk to me about this event that's taking place.
Well, it's taking place tomorrow. We're going to be meeting at 1:30 in Dublin. There are buses going from Northwest Donegal here, at least two buses, if not more. The last time it was on in Dublin, a protest for the Gaeltacht and the Irish language, there was around 10,000 people at it. So, you know, we're hoping for good numbers. The main reasons why we're mobilising people here, you know, are, well, primarily because of the housing situation, particularly in the Gaeltacht here. Some Gaeltacht areas have up to 70%, you know, of the houses are holiday homes in them. There's massive pressure on people in terms of the high rents, the high cost of buying a building, problems of planning permission, you know, obstacles to people when they want to build houses in their own land in rural Gaeltacht areas. And it's affecting the transmission of the language to the next generation. You know, in the last two censuses, the number of daily Irish speakers drops quite significantly in this area here, you know. So we're really concerned about the future of this as a Gaeltacht area. Will it be a Gaeltacht area in the future? And people need, you know, their houses for, you know, to have a decent standard of living, obviously, for the community to continue to function. So that's what really the main reason. But also, you know, there's a lot of obstacles and problems and neglect in the Irish language in education, cuts to resources for teaching through Irish, more pressure to spend more time in other languages, including French and things like that. And then also just cuts to funding, like funding for Udras na Gaeltacht over the years has been cut massively, Forest na Gaeilge as well. You know, the Irish language communities in this country, the Gaeltacht communities and Irish speakers seem to be you know, the weak link in the chain for the government, and whenever they want to cut back, you know, we're the victims of it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we can look at key indicators, can't we? The number of children and girls scullin', as you've already referenced, the use of the language. These are all powerful indicators. This is a language and areas retracting, not growing.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, in one sense, it's a complicated picture, because I think outside of the Gaeltacht, the Irish language is definitely growing in popularity. You know, people say the Irish language is having a moment. They talk about the kneecap effects. You know, there's a lot in popular culture, like, definitely there's a lot more people who want to speak Irish and want to use what Irish they have. But Irish as a community language, as a home language in its heartlands, is definitely not going in the right direction. And you know we can point out the reasons for that. You know, the reasons for it are clear. Like, I mean, there's massive disadvantage in these areas. There's the problems with housing. There's a lot of emigration out of these areas. There's a lack of state support. It seems to us in the Chin Chan campaign and everyone who's coming to this protest, really, it's very clear to us that the government has no vision for the Gaeltacht areas at all. We're just an afterthought, if that.
It's quite interesting, because we have spoken to you know, principals of Gael schools and what have you, that are almost having to, you know, dig into their pockets to incentivize students into the area, because the people aren't able to live in their area for the reasons you've outlined. A lot of holiday homes unable to build on their own property, for an example. So to actually ensure the survival of what's there, we're seeing schools having to come up with schemes, really, they shouldn't have to, out of their own resources, to try and keep open effectively.
Yeah, I'm sure that's happening, you know. But like, one of the strange things about this is that, you know, in terms of surveys of what parents want across the country, and talking about outside the Gaeltacht areas, a huge portion of parents want education through Irish for their children. They want Gael scullinne. But I was recently speaking to Brendan O'Duffy from Monaghan, who was the principal of a couple of different Gael schools during his life, and helped found a few Gael schools. And he said that the process for setting up schools has become so much more convoluted and so much more challenging that it's very, very difficult to set up Gael schools now. You know, they have to reach a certain criteria, and even though more parents than ever want Irish medium education, the state is effectively not allowing it to happen.
Okay. The national protest for the Irish language and the Gaeltacht is tomorrow from 1:30, walking from Parnell Square to Leinster House. Presumably anyone down there or wishing to travel down there would be well received. Thank you very much for your time. I really do appreciate it. Slán, thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Take care. Right, that is Shannon McKee there. Right, let's get to... Actually, I'll take the break. I'll take the quarter two break, and I've come back with more and more of your comments. We've got lots and lots of people messaging in today. Greatly appreciated. I do want to play a request, because I forgot to at 10. Louise Doherty from Manor Cunningham is 30 today. Happy 30th birthday, Louise, from your husband, Michael, Farah and Zach. And another one for you, this time from your mum and father-in-law in Muff, from your mother and father-in-law in Muff. Okay, back with more after these. Owen Corrie's commentator on travel and aviation. And every time, or at least the last twice, I've introduced you onto the show, it's off the back of a weather forecast. I assure you, Rowan, if you've noticed, it's an absolute coincidence, but it's something I can't help but notice. How are you? Are you muted, Owen? Do I have to come round there and unmute on your behalf?
Hopefully I bring a little bit of sunshine after your weather forecast.
Okay.
Yeah, not that it ever rains in beautiful Donegal.
Of course it doesn't. We don't admit to it anyway. I travelled through Belfast last week or the week before, and it was a treat, because just throw the bags into the carousel. Didn't have to remove anything from the bags or what have you. Thought, this is fantastic. And it's something we're going to see now in Dublin Airport as well.
Absolutely. All 33 security lanes now have the new scanners. They also have changed the rules so that you can carry up to 2 litres liquid. As you say, the two Belfast airports introduced this at the beginning of June, and Derry got it at the beginning of June as well. Donegal was sort of a pioneer in all of this. They were one of the first airports to get the new scanners. But what happened, Greg, was a little bit complicated. We had this clearance at the beginning of summer, of last summer, that you could bring to up to 2 litres liquids through security. Then in September, the European Union said, hey, there's a big problem with some of the bigger bottles, so we're introducing the laws again. That changed last June. Some airports have it, some don't. The big news this morning is Dublin now has it for all 33 security lanes, because they only had the new scanners in Terminal 2 and half of Terminal 1. They now have fitted the entire airport. A few changes in the layout with that. So three of the scanners are upstairs in the mezzanine level. That will be new to passengers going through Dublin Airport Terminal 1. But it's good news all around. Good, happy Friday news, Greg.
Yeah, indeed. And is this down to just advances in technology, or maybe the new way short-haul carriers are trying to get people to carry bags and what have you? Maybe they're putting the pressure on. What has driven this change?
Two things, nothing to do with the carriers, but it's to do with the technology, it's to do with the law. The security people banned liquids famously in 2006 over, there was a bomb plot which involved liquids being brought on board. It took a long, long time for security to give an okay, to say it's okay to bring liquids over 100 mils on board. They eventually did that at the beginning of last year. The technology is awesome. It's the equivalent of what you get in Letterkenny Hospital or whatever when you go in for your CT scan that's three-dimensional. It's very different from the old technology. And that was introduced by a lot of airports, including Donegal, were one of the leaders. Shannon, Kerry, Knock, they all have it. And Belfast City got it a little bit later than most, but they are in action. So now the technology's in place. What was a bit slower was the rules to change back to allowing 2 litres. And why we have them in Dublin and Belfast and in Derry, we don't have them in Donegal yet, or Shannon or Kerry or Knock. I expect that to happen. But you got to also remember, Greg, that transfer airport is not going to have them. None of the big transfer airports, and that includes Frankfurt, Lisbon, Madrid, Amsterdam is a big one, Heathrow is a big one, and Paris Charles de Gaulle, and the Middle Eastern airport. So if you're going through another airport, it's still of no use. But most Dublin, a lot of Dublin people going point to point, those wonderful flights we have to Faro and Malaga and Palma de Mallorca, you can just bring your 75 cl bottle on board. I know you want to bring your 2,000 euro bottle of Chateau Yicam over to your auntie.
Yes, thankfully they didn't bang cheese and biscuits. If I were to tuck 1 litre, say a 1 litre bottle, you know, into the side panel of a backpack, would that be okay, or would that be okay? So it wouldn't have to actually be in.
Stays in the bag. It's very simple. It stays in the bag. That was where all the problems were. It tended to be presents. It tended to be bottles of olive oil or wine and stuff like that. And that can still happen on the return journey, which is more likely where people are buying things. The main thing is you can get through Dublin now with your liquids in your bag. Laptops stay in the bag. That's always been the case since the beginning of last year, but liquids as well.
Okay, obviously it's very important what you've pointed out, actually, in terms of the airport you're coming back from might not quite be the same.
Yeah, and America is slower to move on the whole 2 litres thing. There was a lot of talk earlier this year, Donald Trump's new head of shoes be removed. That was a big breakthrough. They also talked about liquids back in June, but a lot of talk, no action yet on that. Security people always very, very cautious.
I'm heading out to Greece, says the listener, and apologies, those watching the show at the moment are just not getting Owen's audio. That's my problem. You're coming out perfectly in Radio Land. It's nothing to do with you, Owen. It's on our end. I'm just letting our viewers...
Will I shout a bit louder?
That won't help. I'm going to Greece. I'll be all right going out, but what about coming back?
Coming back is going to be a problem. I don't think any of the Greek airports have it. I'm trying to running them through my head. Don't hold me to that. But what's been happening, oddly enough, is some of the regional airports have been quicker to implement it. So you see it in some regional airports. You don't see it in others. But it varies completely from airport to airport.
Listen, Owen, thank you so very much for your time.
Always a huge pleasure, Greg.
Yeah, I love having you on. Thank you very much. I just still have to get into that bottle of fancy wine yet. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Again, my apologies if you're watching the show. There was no sound from Owen there. That was just it's something that I can resolve. Trust me, I swear, for our next guest. Right, let's get to some of your comments. Greg, surely Deputy Danny Healy-Ray should be made resign for his comments suggesting a possible link between autism and vitamins. This uneducated view is so damaging to families. I didn't hear his view, and I would hope that, although people take people's word as gospel, I would hope that people would do their own research in relation to that. Greg, we raised funds for a defib and the pads are due to be replaced on August 2026, hopefully not needed between now and then. Just wondering, is there anybody that supplies these free of charge, or is it a case of having to fundraise for them again? I'm not sure. Let us, someone out there knows. We've got a massive, thankfully, and thanks to the public mostly, a network of defibs around the country. What is the story with pads? They don't have to be changed for a year, but this listener wants to know, are there free pads available or does someone have to fundraise for them? I remembered, it's not that long ago, that there was a couple of defibs were broken into and fresh pads taken and out-of-date pads replaced. It was a bizarre, bizarre story. I'm not sure we ever got to the bottom of that. But anyway, listen, sorry to distract from the question. How do you replenish pads for a defib? Do you have to buy them, fundraise for them, or is there anywhere that supplies them for free? How come in America it's the far left that's causing all the problems with their woke agenda and trying to do away with free speech, but the tide is turning on that? As I say, the biggest at the moment, and from an outsider looking on, those that are anti-free speech at the moment in America are of the right. They're getting people's shows taken off air. They get people banned from social media. They're getting people sacked from their jobs for expressing views. At the moment, it's actually the right that seems to be, ironically, anti-free speech. Another caller says, so Donegal County Council are going to vote to get Gareth Sheridan over the line. Another one with a woke liberal groupthink mindset. Why can't we have a real independent alternative like Maria Steen? Remember, the majority of Donegal people voted for the protection of the unborn. Once again, we've nobody to represent the silent majority, believes that listener. Game changer in the presidential election, Gerry Adams, asks a listener. That name did come to mind, but I can't make it make sense at this time. It would just involve a great deal of scrutiny. And whilst there are elements of that party that want sort of more of a connection to the past, there are those that perhaps don't want certain things dragged up. Hi, Greg. Ask if there's any chance the access of insulin pubs will be coming to Letterkenny sooner. Is it going to be Galway for the foreseeable, as they need all follow-ups in Galway instead of Letterkenny University Hospital? I'll try and get an answer to that. Hi, Greg. Could you please ask the doctor? Oh, I asked that one already. Another, maybe Simon Harris did get threats, I don't know. He's a great spoofer. He talks away about misinformation, but he is the king of it, along with a lot of his friends. Now, threats are not good for anybody, but they are not doing themselves any favours. It's all about them, the people being fed up. But again, that's apologetic language to say it's wrong, but it's understandable. And we've slipped really down that route. You know what? It's going to be very hard to get anyone into politics in the not-too-distant future. Whether that's a good thing or not, you'll have to make up your own mind. Micheál Colum, you are far left, but no one shouts that at you. But what makes your view any better than mine? And can I say, as an independent arbitrator, nothing. Everybody's views are valid, and that's why we platform them. Another caller says social media is the reason we are all at each other's throats. It's an easy way to spill bile on each other with no accountability. The creation of fake accounts is too easy. Social media is responsible for 99% of where we're at now. That's a whole debate or podcast in and of itself, in that maybe, you know, the good thing is that people have access to information themselves or can platform their own information. But obviously there's negative elements that I don't know the up, downs, ins and outs. But either way, it is here now. But I think it's responsible for an awful lot of negativity.